We're back for your ears only. I'm Melissa Axelberth.
I'm David Alpern with this quote from the news. Nude is not lewd. That's our mantra. That was George Davis of San Francisco, one of several plaintiffs in a case that would stop city leaders from banning public nudity. The group has asked for a preliminary injunction to prevent the ordinance from passing. Now this.
Words, words, words. I'm so sick of words. I get words only through. First from him, now from you. Is that all you blighters can do?
Ah, yes. Words. The bane of Julie Andrews' existence as Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. Show me, she sang, but there are limits to what we can communicate with a kiss or other gesture. Words make for complex common purpose in common effort, yet the images that words form in our minds are uniquely our own. They're created from our own experiences, culture, language, and often with surprising variation.
According to Benjamin Bergen, a cognitive scientist at the University of California, San Diego, when we hear a word, it brings to mind sights, sounds, feelings, and actions as if we're experiencing them in the moment, something he calls embodied simulations. In his new book, Louder Than Words, The New Science of How the Mind Makes Meaning, Bergen explains how the mind understands words, gestures, expressions, along with innuendo, tone, and cadence. And for your ears only, he joins us now to say more. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Your book acknowledges two traditional theories of meaning, one that you call definition-based and the other termed mentalese. Talk about how they differ.
Well, the definition-based traditional theory is kind of the intuitive notion that I think most people have about word meanings. When we think about the meanings of words, we ask, well, what does it mean? And we can explain it in plain language. So if you look up, human, the definition might be something like a bipedal primate mammal or something like that. That's the definitional idea, that you have these definitions in your mind. Mentalese is also another traditional theory. And the idea there is that although you speak English or Portuguese or Chinese in your normal life, you actually think in a different language, mentalese. It's the language of thought that's just like a language, except that you don't pronounce it, but you think in terms of it.
So in the mid-90s, something arrives called the embodied simulation hypothesis. How does this work, and why is it important?
Well, we looked at the problems with these two traditional theories of meaning and thought that maybe we were focusing too much on words, trying to define words in terms of other words, and weren't paying enough attention to what people were actually doing with their brains and their bodies in order to understand those words. So the idea of embodied simulation is actually pretty simple, and it's pretty intuitive. It's just the idea that in order to understand the language that you hear, you create, using your brain, an internal simulation or recreation of what it would be like to experience the things that are described. So if you hear language about something that has visual content, I took my dog for a walk this afternoon, you recreate using your vision system an experience of what it would be like to see someone walking a dog, what a dog would look like, what the cadence of the dog's walking movements would be like, and what the person would look like walking the dog and holding the leash and so on. Similarly, if you hear language about things that that are actions that you know how to perform, then you use the motor systems of your brain, the systems that actually control your skeletal muscles, to recreate these simulations of what it would be like to perform those actions.
Do brain scans show that, in fact, the portions of the brain that are activated when we're actually seeing and doing these things are the same ones that are energized when we hear the words, when we think about the words?
That's exactly right. You can stick someone into an fMRI machine. This is a giant magnet that allows you to measure activity in the brain, and have them listen to language about actions, let's say. So if you have them listen to John pick the flower versus John kick the ball versus John lick the lollipop, those are actions that use different parts of the body. And in fact, the brain has different brain regions that control those different actions. What we find is that the specific parts of the motor system in your brain that are responsible for performing the specific action that you hear language about light up in response to the language itself.
For all the benefits of language, you remind us that it can also interfere with some aspects of our lives. Why is that, and how?
Well, anytime you're performing two tasks at the same time, one or both of them can suffer. And to the extent that language uses your vision system or your motor system, it makes it harder to use those systems to do other things at the same time. The case that we're looking at in my lab now in a driving simulator is what happens when people drive while also using language.
Let's talk just a bit more about language and culture and how they interact. This is something that's actually fascinated me since I became fluent in Spanish and I realized the word for wife or wives is the same as the word for handcuffs, which is esposas. There's probably an etymological reason behind that, but does culture shape language more than language influences culture?
That's a really fun example because it's a metaphor, of course. Spouses aren't literally handcuffed to one another, and it's actually an example that we see across languages. So you see it in English as well. We say that two people tied the knot, and we talk about the bonds of matrimony. The really fascinating thing is that even though you know that there are no literal bonds of matrimony, hearing that expression makes you think of physical binding, if only transiently for a split second. And we know that from experiments like the ones we talked about earlier. This is actually a case where Spanish and English and lots of other languages are quite similar, but there are also differences across cultures and languages. So in English, the future is ahead and the past is behind, but there are other languages where it's different. A colleague of mine, Rafael Nunez, has looked at Aymara in the Chilean Andes, and for them, the future the future is behind and the past is ahead. In other languages, the past is east and the future is west. So there are differences across languages and cultures. Whether it's language affecting culture or culture affecting language, that's a chicken and egg question that's hard to get out of.
Fascinating. Benjamin Bergen is a cognitive scientist at the University of California, San Diego, and author of Louder Than Words, The New Science of How the Mind Makes Meaning from Basic Books.
Never do I ever want to hear another word. There isn't one I haven't heard. Here we are together in what ought to be a dream. Say one more word and I'll...
And this has been For Your Ears Only.